Emergency Preparedness and Urgent Policy on April the 19th, 2007, and I want to offer you my apologies. I like to be on time, and I like for other people to start on time. And so you've all made an effort to be here for 3 o'clock, and my apologies that we didn't start right at 3 o'clock. People are multitasking in the building, leaving committees in order to testify so they can get some good legislation out of the building. But that's not your problem. That's ours. And so I want to welcome all of you today. I've looked forward to it. As all of you know, I hope you know that you are where you are and where you're supposed to be. If you're not, catch the next plane, because this one is going to land on Owen, and we're going to be hearing about interoperability and communications and so forth in times of emergency. It is extremely important to us to address this subject. I know that you've been reading the paper about the lack of the right communications in various emergencies and crises that have happened throughout our country. And so Oregon would like to be able to get on top of situations and be able to communicate as well as we can at times of crisis and emergency. And so with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 136 and Senate Bill 137. And I welcome Mike Zahn to the table, or whoever is supposed to be there. I see Joe O'Leary coming and Director Ball. So we have great people to talk to us today. Welcome, gentlemen, and if you'll give us your name and all for the record.
Thank you, Chair Verger. For the record, I'm Joe O'Leary, Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Public Safety. It is an honor to be here today. Thank you. My role today is to give you a brief introduction and refresher to the policy justification for Owen. However, I am frankly reticent to do so because I think, Chair Verger, your preface really crystallized the reasons that we are here. And I don't think I have very much to add to that, but to remind the members of the Joint Committee that Owen, as a project, is about the ability of public safety responders, professionals from different agencies, to be able to talk to each other in the field, which, by and large, right now in Oregon, they cannot do. And as a result of House Bill 2101, which you passed in 2005, you directed the state to develop a plan to allow the four main state agencies that have public safety radio infrastructure, ODOT, Corrections, State Police, and Forestry, to unify those four separate radio systems and to do it in a way that allows interoperable communications with local public safety officials, federal public safety officials, and tribal public safety officials. And that is why we are here today. We're also here today because the Federal Communications Commission has told the states that by January 1st of 2013, all of their public safety radios have to be converted to narrowband technology. Their radios and infrastructures will no longer work under the current technology that they use. That's local, that's federal, that's state. We also have a public safety priority, as Co-Chair Verger stated, for emergency situations and for day-to-day use. Public safety officials throughout our state need to be able to talk to each other in all of these circumstances, and they need to have the reliability and security to know that when they push the button on their radio, someone else is going to hear them. You're going to hear today from Lindsay Ball, who's going to talk to you about the administrative oversight of the project, and then we're going to talk to you a little bit about the conceptual design. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the two legislative concepts that are before you, creating Owen as a standalone agency and providing for master siting authority. You're also going to hear a little bit about the primary technology that the project is based on. It's called Land Mobile Radio, LMR. And LMR is the gold standard in public safety communication technology. It is reliable. And as a matter of fact, in the Katrina disaster, I know anecdotally that LMR-based technology was the only technology to remain operable. The private cell phone technology, things like that, they were gone immediately. I'd also note that LMR is the technology that is tied to federal grants. And it is the interoperability grants that Congress are poised to award to the states only for those states that use LMR as their primary technology. And I'm going to conclude my remarks just by pointing your attention to a letter from the governor to the Speaker and the Senate President and the co-chairs of Ways and Means that outline the ask that we are going to have of this legislature to be able to, the financial ask, that is, to be able to move this project forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. I have one question before we move on to Director Ball, and that is that the bill on the last session instructed you to do planning, and then you had a group that met during the interim. Was that group considered their procedures and what they were doing, their work? Did they consider that the planning process, and was their monies spent?
Chair, Co-Chair Verger, the answer is to all of those questions, yes. The State Executive Interoperability Council was the organization that was created by House Bill 2101. I note that it existed actually before House Bill 2101 as the result of an executive order issued by then-Governor John Kitzhaber. So they have been around for about 5 years. The chair of that council is and has always been Chief Jeff Johnson, the fire chief of Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, who has appeared in front of you before. Mm-hmm. And many of their members are actually here in the gallery with us. They are representatives of some of the four state agencies I mentioned, and largely of local jurisdictions, the counties and cities, the 911 folks. And they have been the ones who have put in the volunteer hours to shepherd the planning of this project to where it is now. The money that has been spent consistent with those efforts has come from federal Homeland Security grants. I don't know the exact figure, but I can get that for you.
That's all right. I just wanted to be sure that I just had it on the record that there was some money spent. And my reason for that, so that I'm just very open about that, is that in the co-chair's budget, as you saw, there's planning money. So perhaps when Director Ball gives us his presentation, we can talk about what that kind of planning infers. All right, so Director Ball, welcome.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services. I was asked by Governor Kulongoski to provide administrative oversight of the OWN project and implement administrative protocols to ensure that the funds, the revenues, and the expenditures aligned with the policy set forth by the legislature as well as the governor's office in implementing this project. We will utilize the services of Budget Management Division in Department of Administrative Services, as well as work with the Legislative Fiscal Office of the Legislature to give the project the benefit of expert analysis, quality assurance, internal auditing, and appropriate management controls. That is all dovetailed with the very specific need of planning. Chair Berger, as you mentioned, and I think most everyone is very much aware in a project like this, with appropriate planning, it works very much, much more smoothly than it would if you have to plan as you go along. That you will hear me repeat time and time again. From experience and also training, planning up front makes the project. We'll monitor our progress, measuring our progress by setting timelines and meeting them. and we will account for our performance. We will establish a process for our agreements with local governments, federal partners, and the tribes, a process that protects the interests and achieves the goals of every agency that ultimately must rely on this critical emergency communication system. I just want to put a plug in here, Chair and members of the committee. As a former state police officer in charge of many different operations, you know, communications is the cornerstone of your success in a public safety setting. It makes it or breaks it. And this will push us into an era when we will have up-to-date cross-communication with all agencies in the public safety arena. And I think that's going to be very important for Oregon. It's going to serve our citizens very well. The Department of Administrative Services is also looking at how we can create the flexibility to ensure seamless implementation at every level of the project, preventing any loss of service to public safety agencies. By establishing a competent, accountable management structure to build and operate OWEN, we will guarantee both integrity and the economy to our emergency responders and the public they serve. We will build the kind of system that saves lives, the kind of system Oregonians will take pride in and trust. One of the things that was mentioned by this, brought forth by this committee and brought to our attention was a strong desire to look at implementation on the coast of Oregon, considering the different natural disasters that can occur, from floods to earthquakes to tsunamis. That is certainly an option, Chair Verger and members of the committee, that we can explore and can implement upon your direction. We do want to make sure that, again, as we go forth with those types of endeavors, that everyone understands all the options that are in front of them as we deliberate over those types of policy directions. One of the things that I think we need to recognize, and I wanted to bring to your attention so that we don't miss it along the way and make sure that you're aware of it, one of the big obstacles that I see with respect to the coastal area is providing the time and the opportunity to site locations where we would have appropriate radio towers. A lot of the geographic region of the coast is such that it will require us to put up more towers. We will have to acquire more land for the state of Oregon so we can put those towers up. As you might suspect, buying land, obtaining deeds, easements, providing utilities is going to be quite a chore. That will take, I would say, a year to 2 years to identify the sites that we need and obtain those deeds and titles and easements. Just food for thought. The coast comes with its share of obstacles with respect to siting. It's just the way the land is made. You can't get around that. And so what I'm saying is, we might take a look at how we start looking at acquiring land for those sites and towers as soon as possible on the coast, as we look towards implementation of the OWEN project across Oregon. Because I think that for the coastal area, that's going to be one of our biggest struggles. It's one that we have to address, but that is going to be a struggle for us, I think. Not one that we can't overcome. It's just going to take some more time. As you mentioned too, Chair Verger, in previous conversations, the aesthetic quality around towers is something that we also have to address when we look at those coastal communities too. As everyone knows, it's quite a tourist area. People come to the Oregon coast for its natural beauty. We have to be cognizant of the fact that a tower can detract from that aesthetic value that the coast provides. So we have work that needs to be done, and we need to start as soon as possible with those types of issues, in my estimation. With that, Chair Verger, members of the committee, I would close my testimony and respond to any questions that you, Chair, or the committee may have.
Director Ball, I thought today you were going to talk about phases in some more specifics. Was I Did I not understand that right?
Which, Chair Verger, I wasn't specifically aware of a specific phase that you would like me to talk about. And so if you
Well, we had talked about if we did the coast first, the kind of phasing in and the kind of a ticket item, so to speak, and the cost that it might be to try to help the committee kind of get their arms around what we could possibly do now and what we would be doing later. So I was looking for something far more specific.
Chair Verger, what I would suggest that we do is that we take a look at the money that is budgeted in the governor's budget. And I believe that's, Joe, help me out here, 237 million dollars. What I would ask is that we look for that money to be brought forth for us to continue planning and on the coast with respect to acquisition of land easements, so we can have the base to put the tower on. I think that's extremely important. In the meantime, as we are working through that process of siting the tower locations on the coast, which would take, I would guess, Senator, or Chair Verger, a year to 2 years to start identifying all those locations. At that time, we could also be looking at implementation elsewhere in the state as well, so that we don't lose time. If we were to focus strictly on the state of Oregon, on the coast here in the state of Oregon, and not elsewhere, the land acquisition will hold us back from getting more on-the-ground projects done in construction. For instance, if we were to go to the I-5 corridor, northeast Oregon, southeast Oregon, where we have more of a defined location with respect to sites and towers, we could probably put in more construction early on. And then as we acquire land on the coast, we could start putting construction dollars towards the coast and start erecting towers on the coast. But as I said earlier in my testimony, we have to acquire that land before we can start building the towers on the coast. And negotiating with private landowners, federal partners, will take some time.
Well, the budget question, of course, this is policy committee, and it would be, you know, referred to it. But being on the subcommittee on Ways and Means and then also on the full Ways and Means, I can tell you that there were millions of dollars difference in the governor's budget and in the money available. So the co-chair's budget took only the money that was available. There's nothing in the co-chair's budget that they didn't anticipate that there would be some cigarette tax or some corporate minimum or something else, and they simply dealt with the money that they had. And so actually, working off of that, there's about $4 million as compared to $227 in the governor's budget. So I'm not making a budget decision. I'm just lifting that up for your consideration in talking about this. And I think that in terms of finding property on the coast or the difficulties of the coast, I don't know whether this committee will decide we should go to the easiest place to try to start or whether we should go to the high-risk place to start, and that will be a policy decision they'll make. I'm going to call on Representative Shoffler. He has a question.
Thank you, Mickey, Madam Chair. I don't know who said this, but if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So I agree with you having a good plan. But, in my lifetime, the way we communicate has changed rapidly, I mean dramatically. And I imagine by the time my daughter's age, if it continues at this rate, it'll change again. And I'm not asking you to predict the future, but I hope we're thinking about how we aren't going to have to reinvent this every so many years. So you can just pluck this component out and put a new one in. That's a very layman's way to put it, but I hope you're all thinking about that, because I don't want to have to buy a new system when I'm 70.
Chair Verger, Representative Shoffler, we are very cognizant of that issue. It's a digital system that we'll be putting in, and that can be modified as we move forward and technology advances. That's a very important point. We don't want to spend money that we don't need to spend either on this project. And to get back to Chair Berger, your comment about the money, the $4.8 million that is in the co-chair's budget is specific to planning money.
Right.
And what we would be looking for, too, is appropriation of the $237 million, utilizing some of those dollars to continue with our planning and staffing so that we can start the site selection on the coastal area. Then we would come back in February of 08 with more consistent plans in place and ask for appropriation so we can start implementation and construction of sites on properties that we hold. And then that gets us to the point of where do we start? Do we start on the coast? Do we start elsewhere? And that is definitely, as we said earlier, we will certainly follow your lead and your direction on those types of policy decisions. But in fairness, I think we need to make sure everyone's very much aware of the pros and cons of each. As you mentioned, Chair Berger, on many occasions, there is a serious threat to the coastal communities for natural disasters. We certainly don't discount that.
Well, Director Ball, unfortunately, we live in a world where there are a lot of threats in a lot of places, so we really don't know, as far as emergency preparedness and communications, where we're going to really need to be if we want to look at the broad picture. But as far as natural disasters, yes, I think that the coast would be far more likely to have a natural disaster than other parts of Oregon. Joe?
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger. I want to supplement, too, and let you know that in the queue of our testimony, we will be presenting you some information about a pilot project that is already in the works. Okay. Under this project that is looking at a 7-county area that includes the South Oregon coast. That was one point. The other point I wanted to make, I just wanted to be very clear, too, when we mentioned the 237 number, that is the governor's ask for moving ahead. That is a COP, a certificate of participation. That is not a general fund number, and it is well within the debt, the borrowing limitation of the state, even considering the other borrowing priorities. And to be clear, what we are asking for is the reservation of that amount so that we can continue the planning with the $4.9 million that you mentioned that is proposed, I think, both by the governor's budget and the co-chairs, continue our planning, come back in February, and be in a position, a much better position than we are right now as far as planning goes, to be able to provide you with the information you need on which to decide, yes, we want to go forward, or no, we don't, or here's how we want to go forward in which parts of the state in the February special session.
You know, there was a discrepancy, too, in the amount of money that I believe that you came up with that would cover the cost of the planning, which was 3.8, but the co-chairs put in 4.8. Could you tell me what the other million was for?
Chair Berger, I would like to be able to tell you that. I don't want to speak for the co-chairs. I've actually got an appointment with Senator Schrader at 4:30, and I think that's one of the topics that we're going to discuss.
All right. Representative Hill.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, I think this is exciting. I think this is very important. And I'm happy to see that safety may, before I die, become the top priority in this state, and we fund safety appropriately. Everything else is second, in my opinion, to the safety of our citizens. I'm just curious, this is a wonderful document, but in here it talks about the 0709 base budget being $6
million. Can, Co-Chair Berger, Representative Nelson, can you direct me to which page of the document you're looking at?
Page 6 of the 13. This document is.
I do see where you're where you're speaking to, and I think Chair Verger, Representative Nelson, Mike Zane, and our program manager is going to address that issue for you. I think that what that speaks to is that the staffing request that we've developed amounts to about 5.76. The amount that was put in the governor's budget, which is also in the co-chair's budget, is the 4.9.
I just follow up, please.
All right,
Chair. Thank you. Well, based on this draft plan here, very little others really been accomplished beyond that. You know, preparing the RFP and in this biennium. So I'm just curious why we would need such a huge sum of money. Secondly, Director Ball, in every one of my sessions, we always have this scenario where we look to ODOT and say, or ask them, why do you have so much excess property, right-of-ways, et cetera, you're never going to use? Why don't you either give it to the counties so that, you know, it's their tax cow or cash cow, or trade, you know, for properties that we need? And I just wanted to tell you that I hope that'll be one of y'all's missions, is to take this excess property that we own in this state and properly appropriate it. Would that be part of your plan, I hope?
Chair Verger, Representative Nelson, creating property, in my point of view, is better than spending money to buy property. And that is one of the options that we search search for and look for when we negotiate a property transaction. One of the issues that we've ran into, though, is that oftentimes the person who owns the property that we are attracted to isn't inclined to take any property that we have. That's one of the problems, the difficulties you have with trading. But that is certainly something that we can look at and do look at.
Another follow-up, please. Also, I've just today become so aware of the horrible, horrible situation. I've just shared this with our Chair Verger and Representative Schaffler, but our TriMet system is, you know, has a communication system from hell. And they explained today that, you know, if you are in downtown Portland and somebody wants to know where the buses are, if you look at their system, you'll find that they are all in the middle of the river. And, I mean, it's just a very bad system. It's 10 years old. Nobody's connected. If, you know, in light of the tragedies that we've witnessed this week, if we had something like that to happen on one of those buses, we'd be in serious trouble. I mean, number one, if the police could even find the bus, the drivers have no communication devices that function. So I guess I'm just curious here. I wrote a note as you were talking about, you know, the involvement of, you know, public-private enterprises, and I think, you know, key is that we include the transportation network, and I hope, I'm talking about beyond ODOT, the people that really have, you know, the responding units, the vehicles that could make us safe. Would you have that's not in this plan anywhere?
Co-Chair Verger, Representative Nelson, I couldn't agree more with your point. I think that while our primary focus is those four state agencies and the capability to be interoperable with the local public safety first responders, that we are all about maximizing and leveraging as many partnerships as we can. And I think that is an absolutely the TriMet opportunity is a great one to explore.
Thank you. And just one last follow-up, please.
No, I'm going to have to move on.
Okay.
Thank you, though. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me apologize for being in and out. We're facing some arbitrary deadlines, and there's quite a bit of activity. We're multitasking, your legislature is. But the last exchange you just had about partnerships leads me to have a couple of questions, and you may have covered this. Tell me if you have. Where are the federal government in this whole planning endeavor and then in the execution piece of it?
Co-Chair Verger, Senator Johnson, we do have a testifier in the queue who's going to speak directly to that, could defer to them.
And then I hope in your queue as well, at the invitation of Vicki Hargath, who is our emergency management coordinator Administrator for Columbia County. I sat through a series of acronym-laden meetings in the interim. I can't remember what it stands for, but the S-I-E...
Yes. C.
C. Meetings. I've never been in a room with so many acronyms, so I'm trying to make two points. First of all, I hope as you develop this plan, it is readable and understandable by mere mortals. It was really easy to glaze over in those meetings with all the sort of techno-speak, and for those of us that are eventually going to be asked to step up and pay for it, I want to be able to read the document and understand it. But the second question that I have is for all the effort and energy that was put into that planning effort. Tell me how, in your planning effort, you expect to include the locals.
Co-Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, first fully agree, having been a party who was glazed over in said meetings. Couldn't agree with you more. And it is a challenge, but it's a challenge for folks like you and I to help translate some of that techno speak. What we have produced, as to part of your second question, what we have produced so far is a coalition of public safety professionals, both state, city, county, unlike any other the state has ever seen around one issue, the ability to communicate with each other. I don't know of any other, and frankly, from the reports I've seen from other states who also are making steps toward interoperable communications and have similar councils, state interoperability councils, I have not heard from any other state that has made the progress that Oregon has in developing the relationships that we have.
Hello, Madam Chair. I think, Mr. O'Leary, that you know from the time that we spent together on the SAR Task Force Search and Rescue earlier on this year, that in this whole area of emergency response, interoperability, all of the emergency response, it is my observation, and perhaps this is grotesquely unfair, but it's my observation that there's an awful lot of turf. And I'm just trying to figure out how you overcome that. You say you have an excellent coalition. Am I likely to go out and run into somebody who feels as though they're on the outside looking in, or that the local sheriff in fill in the county didn't get included, or the local emergency manager in fill in the county didn't get included, or the work product of the SIEC didn't get included? I'm just trying to find out where the assurance points along the line are, because it seems to me as if there isn't buy-in in this thing, it is doomed.
Co-Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, very good point. I think there are always going to be some outliers and individuals in different departments and counties that may not feel may not feel completely included, but your assurance that I would point you to are some of the folks in this room. I would point you to the letters of support from the Association of Oregon Counties, the League of Oregon Cities, I'm going to mess up their name, the APCO NENA, the 911 Association, the Oregon Chiefs of Police, and the Sheriff's Association, all of whom have endorsed this proposal. The reason that I think we're going to hold on to this coalition, Senator, too, looking forward, and this really speaks to the policy behind Senate Bill 136, which creates the standalone public utility-style entity that would run OWEN once it is funded into the future. The reason that we're going to hold this coalition together is because it is not the state imposing something on the local jurisdictions. It is a partnership that is going to be in the form of a board that is formed of a majority of local first responders and public safety officials and state public safety officials. And that, I think, we have learned is the best practice for an entity like this. And I think that is going to be the thing that holds this coalition together.
Madam Chair, one follow-up and a budget question, if you'll allow me. Who's the appointing authority for the board?
Co-Chair Berger, Senator Johnson is the governor.
Okay. And then the budget question. Discussion about planning money, either at 3.8 or 4.8, and then your reservation of $337 million in COPs. What happens if the COPs do not materialize? I heard you say that you believe that there was plenty of bonding capacity under the state's debt limit. I don't know whether you've seen the exhaustive list of how much stuff 90 people in this building want to fund with debt. And I don't know if you've accounted for that in figuring out where the ceiling is. But for those of us that are anxious about this project, I mean, after you've been here a little while, you get enough longevity to hear people come and sit at a witness table and promise the sun and the moon and the stars. Forgive some of us if we're getting a little jaded when the sun and the moon and the stars don't materialize quite the way as advertised. What happens if the COP reservation doesn't happen and you just get either $4 million or $5 million in planning money?
Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, I'd like to respond to that question. If the $4.8 million is funded, that will fund what we currently have staffed in state police. I need more staff to be able to adequately plan, search and seek the site locations on the coastal community and elsewhere, make the plans accordingly with implementation once those sites are acquired. And if I don't pick up the $4.8 million plus the planning money that's associated with the COPs, come next February, we aren't going to be able to start moving forward with implementation because I won't have the sufficient planning in place to give you the assurance that this project will be successful. And I'll stop it. I won't be spending money that is going to come on bad planning.
Other than the obvious, why isn't it okay to phase it?
Well, we are going to phase it, Chair Berger, Senator Johnson. What our plan is we can phase this by planning, first, like I said earlier, lay out the plans for working with the locals, how we can share costs with them and also the federal government, how we can start planning for siting in the coastal community, come back in February of 2008, ask for a policy direction from this legislative body as to where do you want to start first and start implementing that in that phased-in region. And then we take the next region and then the next region. And I also think there's opportunities, if we plan appropriately, that we can work with planning and implementation in one region and planning in another, so that we can just keep this in a progressive motion so that we don't have to have fits and starts. But that comes through the planning process. I can't deliver that type of implementation unless I have the appropriate plans in place.
All right, very briefly, Madam Chair.
Johnson, do you have a question?
Yeah. You know, in 2003 we had this bridge package and we had 500 bridges fixed. It's along those lines. And I voted for it, and we fixed a bunch of bridges, but we didn't fix that many. And we didn't get any of that money back. They kept the money. And I got no problem. I'm sure they're finding good things to do with it. But this could be considered such a high cost. You're going to hire a lot of highly skilled designers and planners and electricians and installers. I'd like to get some, if you have any data, on how many people you're going to be putting to work, and if there's anything that will show, you know, where that money will spin off and help the economy. But we go down this road, I want to make darn sure we get what we're paying for and the money goes there and we don't pour a bunch of money into something and then come back and say, well, we didn't need all that. You know where I'm going with all this. So it's just a request more than it is a question.
Chair Berger, Representative Schaffer, I agree with you. If we have the appropriate plans in place so that everyone can understand that we have a well-thought-out process, everyone will be good to go. If it's not there, if we don't have that, then we're going to be questioning ourselves whether or not the money that we're going to be spending is spent appropriately. And I'm pretty cautious when it comes to the public dollar and how we spend it. And I don't waste money. I'm not going to waste money.
You know, and I don't want to get the hearing today off on a bad foot, because I'm really here to listen, and I think we're excited to listen to what all of you have to say. There is some evidence-based information coming to us, and we're going to have to work through some of that. The typical FEMA recommended amount of money that should be spent on interoperability is some millions below what you're asking for. But that could be not with adding towers. That could be without buying property. So, you know, sometimes you have to be careful that you're not looking at apples and oranges.
Right.
And so I just want to tell you, you know, but that presents a hill for those of us to climb that are trying to make the policy, because then people present things like this to the chair and says, look at this. And this is the reason that, you know, this is unreasonable. And so then I start looking at it and I think, well, maybe that 200 and 250 million is without towers, without property, perhaps not taking four agencies. So we have to be careful as we go along. I just am telling you we're climbing a hill here, and I hope that you can appreciate that. So if that's the completion of your testimony, I'm going to call Mike Zanin and have him come up and
thank
continue.
You.
Good afternoon, Chair Verger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Zane, and I am the Program Director for the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network with the Oregon State Police. I'm joined today by Sheriff Russ Berger from Lane County and Captain Tom Clemo from the Medford Fire Department with the specific questions related to local partnerships and the potential that we have there. I'd like to change the agenda just a little bit. Sheriff Berger was going to come up and be up at the end, but I think some of the questions that you've asked Director Ball and Joe O'Leary, I think with it fresh in your mind, I'd like to just ask Sheriff Berger if he'd be willing to, you know, talk about partnerships at this point, and then we'll come back and do kind of an Owen overview and specifically touch on Senate Bill 136 and 137 with your permission.
All right.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, I was going to bat cleanup, but I guess they wanted to move that.
If you'll tell us your name.
Early. I'm sorry, Russ Berger. I'm the Lane County Sheriff. I'm the Oregon State Sheriff's Association representative on the SIEC, and I'm also the chair of the Partnership Committee.
Okay.
Joe O'Leary mentioned some of the chiefs and other public safety professionals that were in attendance, and if it's all right with you, I'd like to recognize them at this time. Stuart Roberts, Chief of Police in Pendleton, Bob Gross, Seaside Chief, Randy Schoen, Medford Chief of Police, Rock Ricosi, Myrtle Point Chief of Police. Also with us today is Jim Swinyard, who's the retired sheriff from Benton County and my predecessor on the SIEC, as well as Sally Jones from the Columbia County 911, and Dave Hand, who's the fire chief in Klamath County District 1. The SIEC was formed in 2002, as you know, and it's been a true partnership among state and local agencies. There are 18 representatives on the SIEC, and half of them represent local government. The other half represent the state. The philosophy of the SIEC is cooperation and shared infrastructure, and that's critical to a project of this size. We're in the process right now of identifying what infrastructure exists in the state of Oregon so we don't have to build towers where they're not needed. We need to partner wherever possible. Mr. O'Leary already mentioned the endorsers to the Owen project, including the Chiefs of Police, the Sheriff's Association, the Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, the League of Oregon Cities, and the Association of Oregon Counties. The SIEC strongly supports and encourages regional efforts to plan, and what the Owen project represents is a vast improvement in communications for firefighters, police, and other first responders to save lives and property. And I'd like to share a story with you to kind of put that in perspective. When I was a deputy sheriff in San Bernardino County, California in 1991, I was on duty and we had a robbery at a bank. Now, in the city that I worked in, the contract city was Victorville. We had about 25 banks. Every one of them was freeway close. So we got two or three bank robberies a week because it was on the main drag between Los Angeles and Las Vegas. So it was there was always bank robberies going on. This particular case, it was a Friday afternoon, a payday, and four gang members from South Central Los Angeles went into a First Interstate Bank, put everybody on the floor, got in the vault, and left with $495,000. We responded and ultimately got into a pursuit with two different vehicles that split up. So it was me and one deputy sheriff. I was on a motorcycle. The other deputy was in a car chasing one vehicle. And we ultimately got into a big shootout with these people, but the driver was so excited trying to get away that the stolen Camaro he was in low gear and he blew up the transmission about 3 miles out of town. So once we arrived on scene, we started what was called a felony car stop when they had come to a stop. And shortly after that, when I say shortly, it was minutes, the California Highway Patrol arrived, another local police agency arrived, the FBI arrived. How they got there was by our dispatchers picking up a phone and calling each of those agencies individually saying, this is what we got going, this is the direction our deputies are going. So they were basically talking over a phone, communicating the information. So there was a significant delay in information. The reason I bring this story up is because things haven't changed much in 16 years. Throughout the state of Oregon, this kind of communication is still going on. It puts your public safety professionals at risk. It puts the public at risk and certainly gives the bad guys an advantage. The SIEC Partnership Committee has set out to determine the level of partnership that is desired by local government. Instead of the state of Oregon saying, look, this is how we're going to do things, like it or not, we're going to use a model that's been developed in the state of New York where local governments can participate at whatever level they want to, whether it be very minimally or completely. We think that model will give the local jurisdictions an opportunity to decide for themselves how involved they want to be in this project. The other thing that was mentioned earlier is that there are simultaneous projects going on throughout the state of Oregon. About 4 years ago, I went back to Washington, D.C. on what's called the United Front effort, and that's where local government leaders go together and take different projects back to D.C. in a lobbying effort. One of those efforts was a interoperability project for our region right there in Lane County. We were able to get an authorization of $10 million from on the transportation bill for interoperable communications. The only caveat was that money be used for the entire district represented by Congressman DeFazio. So what we've done is we partnered with seven counties. It's Linn County, Benton County, Lane County, Coos County, Curry County, Josephine County, and Douglas County to connect all seven of those counties together with microwave and radio. The reason I bring this up is because that system will benefit the statewide system as well. And that's just one example of several different intergovernmental agreements that are signed or in the works currently, including Tillamook County, Marion County with federal agencies, City of Medford, Polk County, and Columbia River Intertribal Fisheries Enforcement. And there's a map in your packet that depicts the seven county projects, so if you'd like to take a look at that, that's in there as well.
The last page.
And I'll close here by saying that, as a police officer, I see this project benefiting all of public safety in the state of Oregon. And as the chair of the partnership committee with the SIEC, I see my role, as developing partnerships wherever possible to take advantage of existing infrastructure to bring the price tag on this down and to create connectivity statewide for all the agencies so that we can all communicate and provide the service that people expect and deserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I heard you, when you were talking about the consortia of counties, mentioned Curry County and some other counties that are timber-dependent counties waiting breathlessly for something to happen with Public Law 106. What happens if that money does not materialize to their ability to fully participate in a program like this that's an expensive program?
Very good question, Chair Verger. Senator Johnson, the answer to that is we're able to use soft match. All of the work that we've done on radio systems to date within a certain time period can be utilized as match for the project. So the actual dollars that come out of the pocket for these local jurisdictions to develop this seven-county system, we believe, is not going to be significant enough to become an issue.
All right, who's next?
Madam Chair, again, Mike Zanin, Owen Program Director. I'm on page 5 of your handout that we provided you. What I wanted to do before we got into the specifics of Senate Bill 136 and 137 was give a brief, and I will promise to keep it brief, overview of some of the activities that have taken place in our planning efforts since the last time we were before this committee. And so if you'll indulge me, there was a group of 5 of us that went to California last month to a National Interoperability Planning Workshop that was sponsored by the National Governors Association and the SAFECOM organization, which is the organization within the Department of Homeland Security that's responsible for moving the interoperability agenda forward. Of the 55 states and territories, we had 50 represented at this conference. So it was a great opportunity to rub shoulders and ask questions with our colleagues from around the nation that were facing some of the same challenges and issues that we are. Made some great contacts, asked a lot of questions. We learned at that workshop that the Department of Commerce has been authorized to distribute $1 billion of grant funds for interoperability. Sounds like a lot of money, but by the time you get through the distribution, you know, it's not necessarily going to cover all of our needs, but certainly Oregon is going to be in the hunt for some of that, and we're in the process right now of working with some of our partners at trying to identify what, you know, once we find out how much Oregon's share of that is going to be, to identify how best to spend that. It's probably going to be a similar appropriation that has happened in the past where 20% of it stays in the state, 80% of it goes to the local governments. And so we're going to be looking at trying to leverage at least that pot of money to help spur on some of the partnerships that we've been talking about. Also, I wanted to touch briefly on the land mobile radio issue that Joe O'Leary talked about earlier. At the April State Interoperability Executive Council meeting, that council actually specifically endorsed land mobile radio as the primary emergency response wireless data and voice technology for use within the OWN system. And I think it's important to note, once again, that that serves as kind of the backbone. That serves as the core infrastructure for the state's public safety communication system. That does not preclude the use of some of the newer technologies. The fact that it's going to be a digital standards-based radio system allows us to take some of these technologies that are emerging and augment the public safety communication system. But without that core land mobile radio system, you can't even begin to talk about augmenting what you don't have in place already. So it's important to understand that that took place this month, and that's what the council endorsed. There's been a lot of talk about partnerships this afternoon. Sheriff Berger talked about some of the partnerships that we have in place. Additionally, we've had great meetings with the Coast Guard. The Tillamook County went up there and met with some of those folks. Yesterday, the Deputy State Forester Clark Seely and I went up and met with the head forester for the U.S. Forest Service for Region 6 and the director of BLM for the state of Oregon. And the context of these meetings is, you know, if we get approval, we are potentially going to have a significant investment in our public safety communications infrastructure in Oregon. To the extent that we can, we don't want to build any more than we have to. We don't want to spend any more than we have to. And the direct question to both the BLM director and the Forest Service forester yesterday was, would you be willing to sign a memorandum of understanding that at least initially is non-binding but sets the stage to say wherever and whenever possible, we are going to cooperate in the development and the maintenance of this infrastructure wherever possible. And to a person, they looked at me and they said, you send that MOU up and we're going to do it, because they have very similar needs as we do. So it's important to understand, with the resources that we've had to date, we've been working really hard at trying to tease out these partnerships and identify them where they exist. Some of the planning that we're going to be doing during the first 6 months of the next biennium is going to be doing even a stronger effort at going out to all of the local governments and more contact with the federal agencies, and really trying to define, what do you have, what do you need? If we get approval to move forward on this project, where are those points where we can connect the dots and share infrastructure? And all I'm telling you is, we have done that in the past. We are doing it today. Captain Clemmel will tell you of a great example we've got going on down in city of Medford. And we're going to do it as we move forward. The difficulty that we've had and that we're going to try to bring back to you in February is how to quantify those savings, because the number for the Owen system that everybody knows about does not account for those partnership arrangements that we have in place. I've been meeting every other week with folks from the metro area, represents Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Clark County in Washington, where we're meeting to talk about how they have to spend $100 million on their system over the course of the next 3 years. How can we partner in the development of these systems so that they don't have to spend as much, we don't have to spend as much, but we both get to enjoy the benefits of that infrastructure? That's going on as we speak. We've got to continue that even to a greater degree in the first 6 months of the biennium. Owen program for 07-09, at the bottom of page 6 there, the question came up about, well, where did that $5.76 million come up? As we've put together our staffing plan, we've developed what we think we're going to need to accomplish the planning that needs to take place. A huge part of that, and I'll talk more about it in a moment, is the procurement. We need to prepare for perhaps the most significant technology-related procurement the state of Oregon's ever faced. These things are not simple. They're incredibly complex, and if you don't do them well, you can get in trouble long-term downstream with protest after protest after protest of people who did not win. And we know of states that have gotten bogged down for a year or more in dealing with protests because they didn't spend the amount of time up front to be able to put together a procurement process that is fair, that is clear, that is defensible. And so we're going to be spending a lot of time on that. And if we get approval in February to move forward, then we would go ahead and release that RFP. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done in advance of that, anticipating that we're going to get approval. So that touches on the $5.76 million. We also believe that we're going to get some federal grant dollars, even through the Department of Commerce grant, that we'll be able to augment what's in the co-chair's budget. To be able to provide funding for some of this. I certainly don't want to say all of it, but that is the need. We're continuing to work with budget and management at the Department of Administrative Services, as well as Legislative Fiscal Office, to refine that. But that number represents, when they said, Mike, what do you think you're going to need to do what you need to do in 07-09? That's the number that I came up with as far as the staffing dollars and the contracting dollars.
I'm going to interrupt you just a minute to just say that the members of the committee that were here heard the presentation by the communication division. Mike Marsh was here and made a presentation, and I have to confess to you, I was really hoping that he was going to come tell me that actually they had a pretty good system within ODOT itself, and he came and told me that they're holding it together by rubber bands. So I have to tell you that I was very disappointed to hear it, but it confirmed what you had been saying. So I was just hoping for a little bit, but I was just hoping for a little bit different picture. So, all right,
yeah.
Continue on.
Madam Chair,
I didn't want to interrupt you, but I just wanted to be sure that I confess to you that I had ulterior motives in having them come, and it all just backfired right in my face.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. When we used the story about state agencies buying parts off of eBay, it's actually the Department of Transportation that is doing that. They're trying to find pieces of communication systems for replacements. It really is pretty amazing. On page 7, if you'll go with me there, we've developed a kind of a draft project plan. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go in that in a lot of detail. I guess I do want to point out just a couple of key things. Underscore the prepare the procurement strategy and the documentation. Again, we see that to be about a 6-month process. We've already begun working with the Oregon Department of Justice and the State Procurement Office within the Department of Administrative Services and building a team to figure out what do we need to do to make sure this is done right, that it's done well, that it's bulletproof as far as a procurement strategy. It's a lot of work. We haven't faced anything this big, this scale as far as covering the whole geography of Oregon. The business development piece there in the middle of your page refers to that full court press where we're going to develop, for lack of a better term, a SWAT team of people that go out and meet with local governments to say, what do you need? Ideally, if you could have anything, what would you like? And we're already beginning to collect right now based on the good work that Sheriff Berger has done with his partnership committee of collecting information of what exists out there from an infrastructure standpoint. And so we're going to try to find those points where they actually intersect and develop these memorandums of understanding so when we come back in February, you can see not just, oh, we hope we're going to be able to partner with people and we're thinking we're going to be able to, but here is, you know, signed commitments from local governments, from federal governments that have said, listen, we will partner if and when you start building that here because we think there's merit in doing so. We'd like to bring back something a little bit more tangible than we've been able to provide you to date. So that's what...
That begs the question of why haven't you done that before?
Madam Chair, simply put, it's a resource issue. With the staff that we have, I think I have to commend the volunteers that we've had to help us, but it's the folks that serve at the State Interoperability Executive Council and the Partnership Committee and the Strategic Planning Committee, it's volunteer. It's love time. I mean, they're not paid to do that, and they've done a great job getting us as far as we can, but we just have not had the resources to go out statewide and pursue this in earnest, and that's what we're planning to do.
That's a good comment. That's a fair answer.
To complete the state interoperability plan, one of the things that we learned at this planning workshop last month was this: the federal government, and that's the other reason. So, you know, why are you going to work with the locals in partnership, and why do you need to do that? Part of it's a federal requirement. If we ever want to get federal grant money for interoperability in the future, we have to complete a state interoperability plan by November 1st. And we have to have a draft into the feds by September 1st. Now, we have been working on a state interoperability plan, and I'd tell you it's about 80% done based on the good work of a lot of our volunteers. The challenge is the federal government just released new guidelines, and they said, well, we want you to address all these other things as well. And you need to have a draft to us by September 1st, and you need to have it into us complete by November 1st. Well, that ramps up the time frame. So we're really going to have to hit the board. So as we go out and meet with the local governments, we're going to be doing a lot of this work to fill out our existing state interoperability plan to include some of the specifics that the federal government is mandating we include if we ever want to receive.
So what are you going to spend the $3.8 million on if you've already gotten the draft to the feds?
Procurement planning. You know, there's a tremendous amount of money that's going to go to the Department of Justice just to pay legal fees. Staff that will continue to do some of the engineering on the partnerships that we have in place. You've heard us in the past talk about the IWIN system, the Integrated Wireless Network, and this CRITFI, the Columbia River Intertribal Fisheries Enforcement.
Right.
we've got projects underway right now. We have to continue to manage those, provide engineering assistance. We've got staff working on those today. We're going to actually hire people to specifically do that, facilitate that outreach and the communication. We don't have any communication staff right now. We don't have any business development staff today to be able to do that. So we've got staff in our proposed budget to be able to do the kind of work that I'm talking about. So the things that are outlined in this specific project plan are the kinds of things that we're going to do to get that planning to the level to where you can have the confidence that, okay, it looks like they've done what they need to do, and then make the policy decisions to do the go, no-go on this project. And then, again, with the legislature's approval, we would propose to go out for procurement in February or March of next year, put the RFP out to bid. We anticipate that will be at least a six-month process to get all of the vendors' response, evaluate them. Before you select a vendor, we wouldn't select a vendor. We wouldn't sign a contract before we come back to the legislature and say, here's the bidders we got. Here's the range of prices that we got. Here's the vendor that we would recommend. We still haven't signed the contract. It would still be, you'd have a chance to look at that and say, should we move ahead with this? And kind of have your finger on the go, no-go button on that. Senator, so you have a question.
Senator Johnson.
I am very glad to hear you say that, because I think whether or not this is a price-driven vendor selection or a negotiated based on other factors not described, I mean, a project of this magnitude, practically every lobbyist in the building has been touched by somebody wanting to get a piece of this, and I think the legislature having some degree of input into the criteria or the methodology for selecting the successful vendor is important.
And Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, if I might add, that's one of the reasons why we're asking for that COP limitation set aside, so we're not just window shopping when we actually go out to bid with this thing, that the vendor community knows, okay, the state's serious. Still pending approval, final approval of signing the contract, the legislature would still have that finger on the button, that are we going to do this or not? And if all the bids came back and they were higher than even what we've done so far, that would certainly be of consideration. But at least it would give us the opportunity to not be talking in the conceptual realm, the cost estimate realm anymore. We'd be talking about, this is what somebody said they're going to build it for. And we'd know precisely what we're looking at. So we think that there'd be at least those securities in place that you could have some assurance that you've got a final say before we actually sign a contract on this. If I might move into the specifics of Senate Bill 136 and 137, which is one of the primary reasons we're here today, and I'm joined by Captain Tom Clemo, and I'm going to let him talk in just a moment, specifically as we talk about siting. But fundamentally, Senate Bill 136 establishes the governance function that is necessary to run an organization like OWN. Fundamentally, what Senate Bill 136 does is it sets up a executive committee of the State Interoperability Executive Council that would consist of three state representatives, four non-state representatives to oversee the operations of the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. Sets it up as a separate state agency. Obviously, this doesn't happen if the project doesn't get approved. But the concern is that so long as the OWN agency is embedded within one of the radio-owning agencies, there's always going to be the potential that there's going to be a conflict of interest, that if it stays within Oregon State Police and times get tough, that Oregon State Police is going to get, first response, first priority. The community of users and potential users that have been looking at this really feel like they want it set up almost like a public utility model, to where the focus of the organization is on providing, robust, consistent, reliable public safety communication services, and that it's actually overseen by a board of people who have an interest in that, and also it wouldn't be as subject to when the budget times get tough and reductions have to be made. Sometimes the state of our current systems today are because we've had to cut, and we've cut infrastructure support costs, and we've kept the money elsewhere. So what Senate Bill 136 fundamentally does is sets up an independent agency to oversee the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. I would also say that Senate Bill 137 sets up a much-needed communication siting authority. And what I want to do is turn this over to Captain Klemmel right now, because as Director Ball has talked about already, one of the most challenging aspects of putting in a statewide communication system is the amount of time and effort that is spent trying to acquire sites, trying to upgrade sites, trying to put in these communication sites. And we know from experience in talking with our colleagues from other states that states have spent incredible amount of time, and their project has ground to a halt because they have not been able to get the necessary sites to even complete a phase. And so I guess with that, I turned over to Captain Klemmo and asked him to touch on that in a little bit more detail from a local perspective.
Before you start, Captain, I want to talk a little bit about a process question or problem here, and you might address that. And that is that 137 has a referral to the environment. And I talked with staff about that, and it actually has to do with land use. I thought it had to do with the beautification, not ruining the kind of the beauty, you know, of the coastal area, but that's not the case. We will run into a problem if that happens. We are a joint committee. We can hear you much longer than a single committee. And so I just want to kind of lift that up to you. If you're not working on that problem, I hope that all of you are, because we're going to have to settle it one way or the other for the committee before we can move ahead with that process. So,
good afternoon. Thank you for taking your time this afternoon to listen to an end user, some end users that are in this room of this potential system that we're talking about today. My name is Captain Tom Klemmo. I'm an engine company captain with City of Medford Fire Department. I'm also the project manager for a tower consolidation project that embodies exactly what we're talking about in partnerships here today. Our siting, and we own the site, has taken us a year to get to a signed memorandum of understanding, which was executed at noon today by Medford City Council. Land use is one component of it. There's several other components, and one of which that you've mentioned, Senator Verger, is the concern about what several towers are going to look like on mountaintops spread across this beautiful state. I would respond to that question in that engaging in partnerships and engaging in the support of a master siting agreement, which is what Senate Bill 137 supports, will allow for the use of existing towers that are on many of the mountaintops, the strategic locations that we need to be at. The state is looking at replacing over 200 towers statewide to accommodate an interoperable communication system. In eastern Oregon, many of these towers are already owned by the Oregon Department of Transportation or the Oregon Department of Forestry, or the other two agencies that are involved in the combining of the four state agency system. In our case, we owned a strategic location that both OWN and IWN needed presence at, and we were able to come to an agreement and allow them the use of a consolidated tower. And in our situation, we reduced the amount of towers on Roxanne from 4 to 1. And that is something that I think that needs to be echoed when we speak to Senate Bill 137, is in our case, and certainly the case of OWN, we are very aware of the impact of more towers on mountaintops, and certainly Senate Bill 137 would allow us to site or co-locate on some of these mountaintops with other tower vendors or other tower companies that are there.
Senator Jones.
It leaves open the question, though. I mean, you talk about master siting agreement and partnerships with local government. It leaves open the question of, does this bill contemplate basically super siting authority, onto private property. There are a couple of us on this panel who have had the pleasure of sitting through all of the ballot measure 37 fix meetings, and I used to think the social issues were volatile. They pale in comparison to land use. So do you contemplate having the ability to supersite onto private property?
I think not looking at private property in key locations, we would be remiss in doing so. But of course, in the spirit of partnership, we certainly must approach the private land use owner and ask if that is a location we can use. And I'll give you an example of that. There is a mountaintop in southern Oregon that is frequently used by both broadcasters and public safety. The city of Medford is party to a lease with that mountaintop. It is owned by a private landowner. That private landowner appreciates the ability of another public safety agency to come in, provide for some critical infrastructure upgrades, clean the site up, and reduce the amount of towers on our dime in this case, which was inexpensive because we shared it across over 15 different other agencies. And that's fairly substantial. If it is a barren mountaintop that we are looking to site on, it has been the approach so far of the SIEC and its member committees to approach the landowner and try to come to an agreement or look for an alternate site, because we know some of the deep water we'd be getting into with public or private land use.
And I follow up, Manager. I don't see anything in this bill that says if an alternate site is not available that the landowner has any way to resist the supersiting of a tower on their spot.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, what we did when we put these bills together is try to articulate what our needs are to address what we believe is a public safety crisis. I'm not insensitive to your concerns and questions, and I think we'd be open to engaging in that dialogue about what would make sense to provide the appropriate protections for the public or any other entity for that matter that they would need to have. So there is not the appearance that we're just going to come in and take over land. But I don't want this committee to lose sight of the fact that we have a public safety crisis in Oregon today that we need to address. And if we don't address this aspect of trying to build out a statewide system, I don't mean to be overly melodramatic, but it won't get done. It just won't get done. I can tell you story after story of it takes 2 or 3 years to site one communication site, and it's painful. We've got to have some relief if we're going to actually accomplish this. And so what Senate Bill 137 does is it sets this up. I think we're willing to have that dialogue about what the appropriate protections need to be. If I might, just in closing, talk about some of the amendments that have been proposed to legislative council. We don't have them for you today. What we have proposed is moving Senate Bill 137 under the umbrella of Senate Bill 136 so we can move this a little quicker. Specifically, some of the amendments, I've got them listed on page 9 of your handout that I just want to go through to make sure that we're being really candid here. Very first bullet, we simply drop the name department in the legislation as opposed to the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network Department. We're just going to drop department. Providing contract authority, that wasn't in the first draft. Providing contract authority for the construction of Owen to the Department of Administrative Services initially, and at a point in time when the DAS director wants to move that authority back to the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network, they do so. We require user agreements to be developed for all users of the Owen system. It's a formality, but it's actually worked very successfully in other states to make sure that everybody knows what the expectations are. Another amendment was specifying what a qualified public safety agency was that may actually use the system, and one of the amendments gives the authority to the State Interoperability Executive Council. We also specifically called out the names of the agencies that are currently participating in a group called the State Wireless Infrastructure Investment Group. I would have said SWIG, but I don't want to use acronyms. And so that simply prescribes their roles and duties and codifies that into law.
I know some people that would have a lot of fun with that.
And it establishes a financial fund to operate the agency. And then the last bullet there at the bottom of page 9 is incorporates, like I said, 137 into 136. Keep in mind that the SIEC would be the authority that would determine when we actually execute this process or use the authority that this legislation proposes. It also clarifies that this applies to both new and existing sites, because some of the trouble that we get into right now is we may actually have a lease for a site and we want to make changes, and we just run up against a wall because we can't make any changes. And then it also makes explicit, this gets to your question, Senator Johnson, the power of condemnation for public safety purposes. I understand that's open to dialogue and discussion, but rather than being kind of it wasn't as specific in the previous introduction of Senate Bill 137. We wanted to make that explicit, so we're not trying to hide anything from anybody, so we could actually solicit that dialogue with folks. So those are the amendments that have been proposed to Ledge Council. They're currently being reviewed. Hope to get those out very soon for your consideration. And with that, I'd open it up to any questions the committee might have.
All right. Co-chair Boone.
Well, I guess there's one guy in this room who's happy to see that OEM isn't going to be put in charge of this one with no additional funding. Just a comment.
All right, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've managed to get to the point where you've sent cold chills down the back of my spine. I have finally figured out what SIEC stands for, having listened very carefully to you for the entire presentation. So appreciate that you didn't go on to SWIG. State Interoperability Executive Council, is that correct? Okay. So that's ultimately, as I look at this, I'm on the supersiding issue, and I share Senator Johnson's concerns. Understand that I was a county commissioner for 12 years before I sat in this one, and I have been through the discussions of siting a single cell tower. Super siting authority really does frighten me as we get into these very challenging issues of siting towers in the areas that you don't have. Co-locating, I have no problem with. We've got some excellent sites in Lincoln County that we have all sorts of things co-located on. But help me, walk me through what you envision as the process to get, if you would have to get eventually to the explicit power of condemnation for public safety purposes, the relationship with local government, the role of the county governing agencies, and all of the complications of land use issues now between local government, land use issues, and on private property in neighborhoods that may not wish a tower. Help me how you'd go through this process.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I'm probably not as familiar with the supersiting issues as you are, given your history at the local level. I will do my best. First, I might add that we're not going to be siting towers in neighborhoods. Where we need to site towers for public safety purposes is on very, very high points, oftentimes, you know, not right downtown in a city.
Just a bit of clarity as you answer my question. I understand that. And from the perspective of an individual who's living in the area, if they can see it, it's in their neighborhood.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, point well taken.
So help me from that perspective.
the way that I would see this working is the way the legislation reads right now is that if a site was deemed necessary for public safety purposes, application would be made to the appropriate authority, and they would have 90 days with which to review that application and either accept it or propose an alternative site that meets their needs. If there are no alternative sites available, then and we wanted to execute the authority that we would have in this statute, then the State Interoperability Executive Council would be engaged. Keep in mind, it's made up of 50% local representatives, Association of Oregon Counties, League of Oregon Cities, Chief, Fire Chiefs, Police Chiefs, Sheriffs. It would come to them to say, do we want to exercise this authority in this case? That's at a fairly high level the best way that I see that happening right now. I think it would be exercised very judiciously. I don't think it would be done without a lot of consideration. I think the other thing is, you mentioned if somebody can see that tower. I mean, part of what this statute does, too, as Captain Clemo mentioned, is this actually can prevent the proliferation of multiple towers on multiple hilltops in people's viewshed. This allows us to basically maximize the use of some of the existing sites as opposed to, well, they're not going to let us build there, but, hey, there's a private landowner that will let us build over here, so we'll pop up another tower just because we can get there. So part of this is actually leveraging the existing infrastructure that's out there and avoiding either tower farms where you have multiple towers on a hill or you have towers on multiple hills that actually I think are more detrimental to the viewshed. I don't want that to be lost on this committee, that's one of the things that this does, and we're going to be very sensitive to that as we move forward. That's probably the best description I can give at this point. I can't forecast every scenario that might happen, and again, you probably have a greater appreciation for that than I do.
I could probably forecast several of them, but I don't want to bog down in it. I asked the question to put sort of an exclamation point on Senator Johnson's questions that this is not one that we can gloss over and say, oh yeah, it's here. It's a huge issue.
Okay.
Especially in areas with limited geography.
Do you have
available.
Any questions? I cut you off before, so I want to give you plenty of time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I decided I'd go see if I was going crazy or I did know what I thought I knew. And in talking with the business lobby, I find they have not been involved in this process at all. Secondly, in talking with the communications companies, they've not been involved, and we have a huge bill right now in front of my other committee on deregulation of wireless. So I just want to encourage y'all. I was just going to ask that when I was talking about the public-private partnerships. You know, I think in everything we've done here, whether it's this huge computer program that we put in last session that has failed miserably, millions and millions of dollars, we fail to include our own entities, our experts, our Intel, our Tektronix, our Geldwin, our medical professionals, and we have so much input. I'd far rather Paul Allen or Bill Gates be our partner than, you know, the federal government. And, you know, I think I could count on them more often. And I'm sad, but I just want to tell you that I think it's critical. And, you know, when we want that property, they're going to go, forget it. I have no clue what you're talking about. Why would I want to be a part of it? We haven't even sold it to, you know, our local communities. But so I'm going to encourage you to do that because I knew the input, and I had just been heard that everybody that's been to any meetings have all been public. And I love you, and I thank you for what you do and protecting my family and my constituents. But they want to be involved in this huge communication project.
Madam Chair, if I might address that, and Representative Nelson, I don't disagree with you. I mentioned we haven't done as much outreach as we need to. Part of it's just been working with an all-volunteer army and limitations on staff. The budget that we have in place today and that part in the project plan that shows business development addresses the very thing that you just counseled us to make sure we keep on the radar screen. And so it's counsel taken.
Well, I'd like to kind of tag along on what Representative Nelson said. You actually can say anything if you know how to say it. And we've just had an episode down on the South Coast where a company has come in and they wanted to do some siting, and they went on private property. And when the person said, well, they wanted to survey, and they said, well, I'm sorry, but I don't want you surveying on my land. They said, well, that's all right. You know, we have the option of eminent domain. Now, that doesn't win a great many friends. And so, you know, I think there's a way to do things. And one thing, you're not going to be trying to cite things quite in the neighborhoods. You're going to be citing things that are up high. However, on the coast, a lot of people like that property up high because that's where the vantage point is. And so they're not going to want to see a tower there. They'd rather wait and have a home there when they're able to afford it. And that's why they bought up on that top. So it's going to be something else. I think where we are with this process is to try to determine And I think now, and I wish today, but probably not today, but we've got to determine what it is that you can actually move forward with as a minimum, and I'm talking about in the budget, and so that we can present that policy and send it on to Ways and Means. I would really feel bad if this committee votes to send it on to Ways and Means where it dies. And I know you would too. And so I think it's, since we are just a policy committee, we still need to have a clear understanding of what kind of policy that we can send on. Would you like to respond to that, Mike?
Madam Chair, as Director Ball has mentioned, we actually have hired an OWN analyst who's continuing to work on our behalf to take a look at the work that our consultants had done in the past. She's only been with us a couple of weeks. There's no way you can get all of that information, but we know that time is short. I guess I'd offer up one idea for your consideration. It doesn't allow us to answer all of the how much questions at this point in time. However, this committee could direct us that pending approval in the February legislative session, pending approval to move forward with a request for proposal, I believe that this committee can say, we want to make sure that when you put out an RFP, that all of the responding bidders propose a coast-first option and the other option that starts in northeastern Oregon and then goes around the state as what's in the current conceptual design. Once we get those back, we'll be able to tell, not with kind of, well, it might be this much, it might take this much. We'd be able to say, this is what the vendor community brought back. We're recommending vendor number three for these reasons. And the legislature would still have the final authority to say, you know, it's going to cost us, and I'm just making this up, it's going to cost us $50 million more if we do the coast first. It might be money well spent because of the risks associated with that. But what I'm saying is you can actually give us policy direction that we can embed right into the actual request for proposal. Again, not that doing the request for proposal commits to doing the project, because you still have your finger on the button before we actually sign a contract. But you'd be able to see the responses from the vendor community that said, okay, this is what we would propose to build it. And maybe there's not going to be any difference, but until we actually get to the point where you have bids in hand and ready to sign a contract, we're still kind of guesstimating and, you know, estimating based on a fairly high level conceptual design that's been done. So that's a personal idea for your consideration. We could take all of your policy direction, whether it's disguising towers. We could ask bidders to propose what would be the alternative if we put in these 35 towers in a disguised fashion versus a standard tower. We could build all that into the actual procurement process to where when we get the bids back, we could see if is there a difference, and if so, how much. And the legislature could have the benefit then of looking at that and say, if there's a higher cost to do this or that, make the decision. Do we want to make that investment?
Sheriff Berger, if we had a crisis this weekend, what would we do with the kind of communications that we have today? And let's say that it was not necessarily a natural disaster. Let's say we had a terrorist attack, and it took place in a metropolitan area such as Portland.
Well, Madam Chair, there terrorist attack could take on any number of different scenarios, and if you speak to communication only, we would do things the way we are doing them now, and communications would be delayed. The most important time during any event, whether it be a natural disaster or a man-made event, is that initial first response time. That's the time when all of the information that's relevant to that event needs to be transmitted and received by the responding agencies, because that's when you're going to get the biggest response and the most bang for that response, if you will. Depending on what the scenario is, you could, with a terrorist event such as a improvised nuclear device, you could wipe out a large portion of a metropolitan area. And what would end up happening is mutual aid would respond to that area, but everybody has different technology. So communication, as with the World Trade Center event, is a huge issue because we don't all have the same technologies. We don't all have the same radio standards. So we would try to piece together the best response we could with whatever equipment we had available.
The crisis that happened at Virginia Tech and is being discussed here on the Oregon campuses about the technology and the communication systems that they have. And I was interested in the kind of rotodial system that you have with cell phones. I was not aware that you could text message and actually send, like a rotodial, to thousands of people by cell phone. Now, that's if the cell phones are still working.
Correct.
And so I think that brings to mind, in the system that you have, how much assurance do we have that it's not going to go down?
You have no assurance. The first thing to go down in Hurricane Katrina and at the World Trade Center was the cellular telephone networks. And the public safety switch telephone networks went down. What was left are the portable and mobile radios that we have in our vehicles and on our person to communicate with one another. And in the state of Oregon's current mutual aid system, all of the fire departments in the entire state of Oregon have one frequency in common. And you can imagine if 500 firefighters are trying to communicate with one another when you have one channel to talk on. The Owen system, which fixes 30 years worth of problems with sites, with infrastructure, with radios, with repeaters, and all the complexities that go into that, also solves a bigger problem of how do we communicate with each other in big groups simultaneously across various boundaries, whether they be governmental or jurisdictional or police and fire or Oregon Department of Transportation. How do we communicate? It solves that problem of having the ability to communicate with each other seamlessly, and also leaves the ability to plug in a data component of it as well, which is your text messaging and your live video and a multitude of other ways of doing it. What's occurred in the last 7 or 8 years in public safety is, rather than step back and look at our system as a whole, whether it's Sheriff Berger's system or the City of Medford system, we've thickened the silos and made it more complicated to contact one another. And as soon as I leave my jurisdiction, my best option is my cell phone. It's not the $30,000 worth of communications equipment I have in the vehicle. It's the cell phone that I can pick up for $59 and have an equally cheap monthly rate, but is totally unreliable during the situations where we need them the most.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Cowan?
Thank you. I will tell you that we have experienced just things happening within the county that took out our ability to communicate via cell phone very quickly in rural areas because the system was overloaded very quickly until we could get in mobile units that would help us with that. But I'm confused by your request in terms of policy direction. If you need to go out to bid, do we have to state that we'd want the coastal area first or not? I guess I'm trying to understand the bid process. If you're given the staffing and the organizational opportunity to get ready to go out with an RFP, can't we ask for RFPs that essentially are the entire state, but then break it down as to some of the pieces, and then we could later decide which ones are feasible to do? I mean, I don't understand the question about direction as to where one wants to go first, I would envision a whole state package bid.
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, the conceptual design that we have right now, as you recall, is a three-phase project over 6 years, starting in northeastern Oregon as the first phase. Second phase is basically the southern one-third of the state all the way across the state. Third phase would be the northwest portion of the state and the north coast and the Willamette Valley. That's the conceptual design that came to us. So it is envisioned to be a phased approach. I think all I was saying is that if you wanted to give a specific policy direction that, if we get approval to go out for a procurement for this system, then you could say we want, as part of that, vendors to respond to an option, specifically identifying a coast-first option and how much that would cost, as opposed to whatever other option they might recommend. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the three phases that the contractor gave us, but to say, is there a difference in that approach? So we would still be talking about a statewide system, but phase one in this case would be the coast. And if that was more expensive than another phase one that they might envision that they thought would be more appropriate for Oregon to follow, then we could at least bring that back to the table and have that discussion. And that's all I'm trying to say.
So. I understand. And my apologies. I came to this whole process a little late, so I haven't been part of the initial stuff. So I'm catching up here.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to, I'll be brief too because we have two more presenters. But I see a plan in my eye, and I'm hoping somebody from Ways and Means is listening. We have some other funding asks in for, one is for search and rescue, has some bills, and OEM funding, things like that, and need some money to do these things that we have been tasked to do. Dogami has its LIDAR mapping plan. We have a seafloor mapping plan to meld together to create a credible tsunami mapping model. And I see all that as kind of infrastructure in that. And then once we get that, hopefully once we get that, or a good portion of it to start at least, if we could get some way to communicate. And this is, I'm really happy to hear you say that we'll be able to have some input into the policy request for how this is presented to the RFP respondents and how they can say, here's the whole project, here's how we would phase it in, these things, if you only had this much, you could start here. And I think that some of us who live on the coast have a little bent toward doing the coast first because we feel like we have the most risk and the most uncertain risk as far as timing. So anyway, that being said, I'm glad that we're hearing all this now. Thank you very much.
All right, I'm going to call our last two people up. I'm going to call Paul Schneider and Jim Gardner.
No, I love red ink.
We'll let you rest. You're gonna be the last hitter up.
I'll be the last hitter. Okay.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. We support the principles that are embodied in Senate Bill 136. That is to create the relationship between the State Interoperability Executive Council and the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. Also, the creation of the Executive Committee to oversee the work of OWEN. A couple of concerns that we have to do with the structure, and I understand that amendments are being prepared, and perhaps to some extent the amendments would address these concerns. That is to say that the SIEC has existed for about 4 years. Although it was statutorily created 2 years ago, it existed by executive order of the governor for a couple of years before that. And over that period of time, the SIEC, in my observation, has developed a culture. And the culture is one of cooperation, communication, partnership, everyone working together toward a common goal. And I hope that will continue far into the future. The structure that's, I think, envisioned by Senate Bill 136 is to create a standalone agency, which we endorse, for OWEN, and the oversight of the agency by the executive committee. That committee, from the draft that I have here, consists of 7 members, 3 of whom would be state agency representatives specifically. The other 4 would not be state agency representatives, but there's no designation as to who they would be beyond saying that they're not going to be state agency representatives. Now, as I mentioned, the SIEC has got very broad representation. There are a lot of people on it from local government. But it's also possible, in light of the fact that the other major interest holder in this issue, apart from the state, is local government, that local government has all these towers, all these issues, all these communication devices, including fire departments and police departments and special districts, and all these different entities in various states of completion and repair, that we would like better to see some specific representation of local government on the executive committee. Because the executive committee works with Owen, and Owen has a number of tasks within Senate Bill 136 that are very important in terms of the relationship and the continuation of that relationship between state and local government. That relates also to Senate Bill 137, which I also understand is going to be substantially revised. That measure provides that someone, although it's drafted to involve the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, I believe it will be redrafted to provide the SIEC, may site remote communication structure, including infrastructure owned or co-owned by a local government. There's a good friend that I have in the back of the room who likes to say from time to time that no good deed goes unpunished. And we don't want to be in that situation, where basically a local government has gone to the plate and made a significant contribution to this infrastructure. It would be not too good public policy, we think, for someone to come along from Owen and say, hey, thanks for all the work, we'll take it from here. Especially if that means that, in effect, that the concerns and the interests of the local government take second fiddle to those of the state and Owen. That's not anything that's written here. It's just a concern that we have that we'd like very, very much to avoid. And one way to do that, we think, has to do with the membership of the executive committee in Senate Bill 136. Apart from that, we endorse all the comments that have been made by the other witnesses who have presented to you today. We think this is an important project. It needs to be done. We endorse the goals and the structure generally as provided in Senate Bill 136.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Any questions for Paul? All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Gardner, and I am appearing today for Microsoft. And I will assure you and Representative Nelson that we did not conspire ahead of time to to talk about Mr. Gates and Mr. Allen as participants in this project. But I was gratified, nonetheless, to hear the comment. I think it is fair to say that this is arguably one of the most important issues and projects before this legislature, if not the most important issues and projects before this legislature, because, as Representative Nelson mentioned, it affects deeply our ability really to survive and to deal with the potential for catastrophic terrorism in an effective way. And I would say also, in the interest of full disclosure, that it is possible that Microsoft will be a participant in a consortium that will be bidding on this, an aspect of this project. And to that end, I wanted to address very briefly what would seem to be perhaps a narrow issue, but I think is a very important one, and it relates to the question that Representative Schaffler put, which is, how can we be assured that we do not build a network that will, upon the date of its completion, be obsolete or nearing obsolescence? And the answer to that, I think, is to take very seriously the statement on page 16 of the overall presentation, which is this: use of LMR does not preclude the use of other technologies that support the public safety mission. Rather, a robust LMR infrastructure provides a necessary foundation on which other technologies can be deployed. That relates as well to the existing language in the law that appears on page 7 of Senate Bill 136, that standards should be developed which promote future wireless communications infrastructure and long-term technological opportunities. The technology of network management, of smart networks, is progressing at an exponential pace. We're able to do things today in terms of data management, data manipulation, modeling that were inconceivable 3 or 4 short years ago. And the same, I can assure you, will be true in the future. We will be able to essentially take data that is flowing across this new tool, manipulate it, and quickly apply to it software tools that will enable us to exponentially increase our ability to respond to emergencies effectively. Being mindful of that capability from the get-go is of critical importance. It was the same motivation that when DARPA first designed ARPANET enabled the Internet to become what it has today. But keeping in mind the future potential for making a smarter and smarter network is of critical importance. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you both for your testimony. The time is pushing us a little bit, and I'm going to call Director Ball back to the table for a little wrap-up, and then I'm going to, after that, I'm going to have each one of the committee members, if you would so choose, to have something to say for the good of this order. All right, Director Ball.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. A couple of reminders to make sure that there's some clarification on a couple of things. The first is, if we don't take action on 137, 136, OEM holds the authority over OWN. It won't come from OEM out. The second thing I want to make sure that everyone understands, and I don't know if it's perfectly clear, is that if we don't appropriate the money this session for OWN, we will be waiting 2 years to do it. Because the 08 session is not set up for appropriation. Mm-hmm. It can be set up for scheduling. And that's why if we want to act in the next 2 years, we need to start looking at the COP money and the general fund money in state police for the planning part of it. We don't have to spend it all. Mm-hmm. We can schedule the planning part of it, come back with the plans to the legislature in 08, giving you comfort that the plans are in place and we can implement, and then ask for the money for implementation at that time.
Okay, this is my problem in just trying to think clearly here. You have a number of amendments that you can bring back to us. We're not under the same guidelines and deadlines that some of the other committees are, because we're a joint committee. But if you don't get 137 and 136 put together, and we are left with one, but we're going to have to refer the other one to the environment. It may get heard, which I almost doubt that it will get heard, but if it were to get heard, their committee would be ending that day, very likely. It'd be at the last day. Under that scenario, you can still move forward?
Chair Verger, my concern is that the referral is on the siting authority.
Right.
And as I mentioned earlier, what I have the greatest obstacle over is being able to acquire sites in the coastal area so we can put up towers. So 137 would be critical to us being able to complete the network in the coastal area.
When will you know if it can be blended, that the two bills can be blended? When are you going to know if we are going to be able to look at 136, but it's going to include the siting?
Chair Berger, let me work on that and get to you tomorrow.
Okay.
I can give you a more clear answer tomorrow after I do a little research.
Okay. Well, I'm just worried about the time frame.
Chair.
And because, you know, once they shut down those committees, there's not anything we can do. We can meet, but that won't help you if it holds with that referral. And when I thought it was because of the beautification, and I went and talked to leadership about that, I was corrected and said, no, it is because it changes, it's involving the land use system. And so I don't know how we can expedite it, but there are some smart people in the room that can figure out if there's a way to do it. I just want you to know, as one of the co-chairs, I'm worried as I look at the calendar. So
Monday's the last day.
Having said that, just if you'll just stay right there, and I'll go to the members of my committee, and if there's anything that you'd like to add. Representative Cowan?
Thank you for the opportunity. Like I said, I'm playing catch-up here a little bit here because I haven't been part of the entire process developing it. So I think the concerns have been voiced. The main piece that I would want to see incorporated in amendments that come back in the near term is addressing that representation of local government on the executive committee. That would be an important piece for me to see.
Okay.
As far as trying to meld them and moving it to forward, I will leave it to better minds than mine.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Berger. Berger, I guess I just want to say one more time, Director Ball, that I feel that we don't have our act together. And I think it's very hard to ask for, you know, huge sums of millions when we don't really have our program together. And just like we just talked, and I appreciate very much Mr. Gardner being here from Microsoft and Paul Snyder, but, you know, I think in both cases we find out that there's a lot of input from, you know, our private world that can augment what we're doing, and they need to be a part of it from day one, not after the state's just automatically determined this is the way we're going to do it and this is what we're going to fund. So I do agree, just like Jim said, that this is could be the most important bill in the entire legislature, and I feel strongly. I come from a world that safety is critical, the aviation world. So I hope, you know, we just, I guess, get a more rounded task force together, and I mean, you know, start putting the 12 and 14, 16 hour days into it to come up with something that we can sell.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I want to thank Representative Boquist, who served as our co-chair and did excellent work during the 18 months in the interim, and he's joined us today. And
thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think what I have a couple of comments, and then I have a homework assignment for Joe in the back, because I carried 2101 on the floor last time. I think everybody knows that. And I went through the Ways and Means process last time, and frankly, the challenging portion of the Ways and Means process remains today as it did 2 years ago. And to overcome that, you know, we need to have enough information to convey to our colleagues that a public safety crisis really does exist. You don't have to convince me. I think everybody in this room knows I believe that. But the problem is communicating it to the rest of them. And then having the answers that are always going to come up, which, well, what about the feds? And I think, I mean, we need to get more information, and I'm more than willing to meet with Joe and Lindsay, and make maybe, and Co-Chair, you and I still, last time I checked, are on the Governor's Security Council. It's never been implemented. And one of the intents of 2101 to do that was to be able to have several members that had access to close-hold information who could come out and say, yes, this is true. We need to do this. It's imperative. And we're kind of facing the same crisis we had last time in the budgeting process, and that is okay, we've got to convince our colleagues that this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I think right off the bat, knowing whether the $1 billion from Homeland Security is fiscal year 07, whether it's fiscal year 07, 08, two-year money, whether that's the federal level or whether Congress is anticipating doing something else, some information about the DHS formula grants and how it works, and some assurance more information in regard to either Joe or the sheriffs or somebody who have actually reviewed the Department of Homeland Security's threat profile for Oregon. So we know, we can, without talking about classified information, we can articulate to our colleagues that this is why we are or we won't get federal money. Because, frankly, you know, and I guess I'm not a member of the committee here, so I can get censored real easy, but the challenge we have is we went downstairs last time and they said, well, we don't see 2013 as a crisis. And so I'm not going to spend any money, and I think almost a quote, I'm not going to spend any money on this emergency services until we get, I think the 010 number was thrown out back then. I don't remember what it was. And so we at this end have a lot of information that we need to be able to convince our colleagues that this is a good idea. And I think I understand the CLP process, which is basically you're setting aside money, but you really can't spend it until you come back with a plan. And we got to be able to convince our colleagues of that and the merits of it and why the federal government, like DHS, is not going to come bail us out. And I'm willing, especially now since, you know, next week we'll be doing shifting gears here, to spend time to understand that so that I can actually go back downstairs and express with confidence that, you know, these things aren't going to happen. But Marla's back there, and she knows exactly what they told us last time. So it's a tough road to hoe, especially even for $237 million. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator Johnson. We are giving remarks for the good of the order, and whatever closing remarks you might like to say to the OWN.
Nothing like being out of the meeting pretty much the whole time and then coming back with an opinion. I am nervous about this. I've been in this building long enough to hear lots of promises made about huge projects that haven't worked out quite the way people expected. I have a great deal of confidence in Director Ball. I think had it not been for Director Ball, Scenic would have augured in. And so that helps temper my concerns. I'm very worried about making sure that there is adequate inclusion of local folks. This can't be Mother Salem telling locals what to do. I've heard some reassurance here, but I still have some concerns about it. It is a jaw-dropping amount of money. I know that you value planning enormously. You need money to go ahead and begin the process. We need the interoperability desperately. But I would not be true if I said that I don't have huge concerns about it.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Co-Chair Boone.
Thank you. I get second to the last word, so I'll bring it up a little bit. I have a lot of confidence in the people in the room who are doing this and who have worked so long and hard at it, and I appreciate it. And the one thing that I would say is what my co-chair has brought up is our really tight time schedule and schedule for getting things through committees. And so I think it is the April 30th is a Monday. I think that is the last possible day in a substantive committee to hear it, other than some of the committees like ours, all the joint committees, and I believe rules.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a buy, but I believe that all ends at the end of May. So I think you're looking at a maximum of 6 weeks to get done. So that's, it just piles on. I think Representative Nelson made the comment about 12 to 14 hour days, and that's a lot to ask of volunteers and paid people too. But it's nothing new to us, of course. But it is important, and I know that's a lot to ask, but I was told by our speaker there when I was worried about our committee getting how much time we're going to have, and it was determined to both of us that we do have through May. But if you have to go to the Environment Committee, I know they're firm on that, at least in the House. Don't know about the Senate, but they're saying nothing after. The 1st of May is too late, so that's
Chair Berger, if I might suggest, the concept of melding 137 and 136 together in with amendments so that we have one bill, and working with your office, would that be a reasonable solution to the situation that we're facing today?
Well, I think that what we need to the committee needs to really determine, and that is how much support are they going to get, and that can be expressed through the Ways and Means process. And I have to be perfectly honest with you. I am very, very concerned because I'm not getting a lot of support to me as chair, as co-chair of the committee. And so, I think that I believe that Representative Nelson is absolutely correct. I think that people see it, that it's not a, it's, your act isn't together, and I that has been expressed to me by others. I think that Representative Boquist pointed out that it's a hard sell downstairs, and so there you go. I think that the thing that bothers me the most is that if you don't get this 137-136 thing worked out, it's really bad. Unless just not having anything happen this session is not bad. In other words, if it's going to start another interim of planning and in 2 years coming back, because you're absolutely right about February. That won't work if nothing happens this time. And so, it's not a bright picture, but I think you did a good job today. I was sorry that I didn't get more of kind of the analysis and phasing in, but maybe that was just my own expectation of that. And the planning money is in the co-chair's budget, and it might be that is as good as we're going to do, and that's another thing that worried me when you said, really, that's not quite what you need to go forward.
Chair Berger, no, the $4.8 million that's in the co-chair's budget is the part of the planning that would fund the current staff and state police.
Right.
To be able to adequately do the research necessary for site selection and continuation of the phase-in, we'll need the planning money that would be brought forth by the COP money. And that was part of the joint plan that we had originally. Mm-hmm. And with that planning, I feel fairly confident that a lot of the discomfort that you're hearing about the project will start to come into focus. That we have to be able to have the staff on board to be able to do that planning to create that comfort level for people so that they can get behind the project.
It would be my advice not to incorporate 137 into 136. You don't even know where the sites are until you do the planning. Why ask for authority to supersite them and complicate your bill? I mean, people are lining up right now in the next hearing room to complain about 37. That has been a constant issue since we came into session. And I think if it becomes clear that as part of this, we're granting supersiting authority for towers anywhere, and we don't even know where they are, that you're asking for a level of complication that's unnecessary. You can always come back when you have the plan and ask for the supersiting so that people at least know where you're going to stick these things. I'm very reticent to just give carte blanche authority to some huge state group to go out and plant towers wherever they feel like it. Need notwithstanding. It's a messy process. And I hear from my constituents all the time that when government, whether it's the feds or the state, come in and start telling them what's going to happen, there is a lot of resistance.
If one, you see, 137 has a referral, as you know, Senator Johnson, to environment. And we're running so close that I don't think they would even be able to hear it.
That's the process argument against putting them together. I mean, that's the process argument about putting them together.
Right.
I'm just making the case on the policy side. Get the money to plan, go out and identify the sites, and when people know where the sites are, there might be a greater comfort level to give an agency authority to supersite.
Well, any further remarks after that? I'm sure that this is not easy. But you know, when you look at, we're sitting in these budget hearings, and when you're looking at $227 million, even though you can't spend it, and even that it's certificates, it is jaw dropping. And so I don't know what to tell you. I will say this. I'm going to close the meeting. We're running out of time, and I know Senator Johnson and others probably have other meetings. But my door is open to you, and we'll continue to work each day and see what we can come up with to solve a few of the problems that we're facing right now. And I do appreciate your being here today, appreciate all your testimony and all the hard work that you've put into this. And with that, I will call the meeting adjourned.